So my view is the change of leader requires a general election.
Hello, and welcome to The Trawl, the show where we scroll through Twitter so you don't have to. I'm Gemma Forte.
And I'm Marina Perkis, and this week's Trawl includes the world's best booking on a politics show ever, Twitter's thoughts on our new PM, breakfast telly-lunacy, and more besides. But first, Gemma, how are you? What's happening? Have you been attending lots of Liz Truss victory parties?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I've just finished taking the bunting down off the front of the house and I've just peeled off my Union Jack tracksuit. I'm going to be honest with you, Marina. You know I'm usually pretty positive. I've been quite depressed. I'm like, I don't know, I can take much more of this. And it got to me for a couple of days to the point where it was the day before Johnson's last speech, please be last speech. God, it won't be, will it? But I went to work and I came back really, really late. And I was in that mode where I was like, right, tonight I just want to take my makeup off and just watch something mindless and sort of slip into sleep. And I got home and something was going beep. And I just thought, oh God, I've had this before. It's when your smoke alarm battery goes, right?
Yeah.
And I just turned into a woman possessed. I think the news, everything I've been reading that day, everything I'd seen on Twitter sort of like just had pent up. I ended up, cut to, smacking the shit out of the smoke alarm. And then it still carried on beeping. And I was like a woman possessed. There was no one in the house. Kids were at their dad's. Cut to, I'm on a chair. And I just thought, I can't get this thing open. I mean, it was disproportionate. So I yanked it out and the whole thing came out of the ceiling. Plaster sort of fell in my eyes. And it was hanging by a wire.
No.
And I thought, okay. And then it went, beep. I thought, oh my God, ended up going downstairs, getting some scissors and I cut the wires and then it went beep. I thought, oh my God, I'm going to have to bury it in the garden. So I took the thing downstairs and then I was like smashing it under and I just thought, this is ridiculous. This is too much. Mm. And then the next day, hearing Johnson just lie through his back teeth, I could barely listen to it. When he got to the bit about social care, I just was, I was apoplectic. You know, there's only so much that you can sort of compartmentalise or laugh about. And then at the moment when old Truss got in, and I was actually, funnily enough, it was like, you know, when people go, where were you when Diana died or something like that? If it was like, where were you when Liz Truss made her first speech? Well, I was staring into the fridge looking at a yogurt that had gone past its sell-by date. And I just thought, shall I eat it? I ate it. And then I was actually sitting at the laptop doing the Trawl, looking at everybody's tweets and things, but sort of tuned into the radio to the worst, most third-rate, bog-standard shite speech that sounded like you tuned in perhaps, and in no, I mean this with no disrespect, but to like a general manager of a Currys.
Yeah.
Doing a quick speech, you know, like the Prime Minister should have better speech writers. It just should be more inspiring than that. So sorry, bit of a negative, but that's where I'm at. How are you?
So a really good week that you've had then, Jimmy. You've been really positive.
It's been brilliant. It's been brilliant.
You know, I'm really sorry, listeners. I'm not going to build on that in terms of positivity because I've been feeling quite similar, actually. In fact, yesterday was a real low light. You know, I was on Jeremy Vine Extra yesterday, and my panelist that I was on with was Mike Perry. He's a like a right leaning radio host of Talksport, and normally I can sort of have a laugh at like how ridiculous some of the debates are, and you know how they just trot out this the right wing rag lines that you read. But yesterday, I don't know if it was like lack of sleep, my little one's had a temperature, I'm 5 weeks from giving birth to my next baby, and
all adds up.
Yeah, it all adds up, and I wasn't having it. I wasn't having it. I was really annoyed. He basically was saying we shouldn't have a general election, and he was saying imagine the chaos and squabbling that we would have to endure with like Labour in power or a Labour Lib Dem SNP pact. And I just thought, are you joking? Like infighting and squabbling and chaos, like what have we just had? We had the Brexit referendum was because they were trying to quell inner squabbling. We've had two, maybe now we're on the verge of our third vote of no confidence. We've had 3 PMs in 3 years, complete inertia because of this bloody leadership contest. And you're telling me that? And he was just contradicting the shit out of himself. He said Labour would be no good because they've got no experience in government. Well, yeah, sure. But then said we shouldn't judge Truss on experience because she's not done the top job before. And I just couldn't bear it. And Dawn Neeson, who was hosting the show, well, refereeing actually yesterday, might you want to say, she was even trying to like reduce the tension, and after one break she told viewers not to worry and that Mike and I had a group hug when we come off air, and let me assure our listeners we had not.
As if you were like hugging Mike Parry. That's so weird.
Honestly, I came back, Gemma. My husband said to me, are you okay? I felt like I could cry yesterday. I was that upset. Mm. And I just said to him, I feel like I want to just go and live in the woods.
I know. But do you know what? Like, you know, we've had some tweets. People are feeling the same as us, feeling despondent. So we've all got to get together here and try to keep the faith and just think this surely this shit show has to end at some point. Mm. And for the record, Marina, when you checked in with me, I could tell you were having one of those days. And I think that people underestimate the amount of sort of adrenaline required and, you know, travelling in and then formulating your arguments and then having to listen to stuff that is just like off the scale in terms of reality.
Lies.
And you can have, and some days it's very enjoyable. And on the odd day, it can really get to you. But you were saying, oh, I think I really, you know, maybe I went a bit over the top. You didn't. You were brilliant in that clip. You were brilliant. You didn't get up and smack him around the head, you know.
I wanted to.
Yeah. Well, we all know that.
No, I only joke.
You were too busy hugging him, weren't you, off air?
Yeah, backstage.
Ugh. As if. No. Right. Okay. So, let's sort of slightly change the tone. Before we go in and see what Twitter has to say about our new Prime Minister and what fresh hell she's going to bring to the country, let's go to something positive. And actually, it's particularly poignant, given the fact that last week we were chatting about the BBC, weren't we, and Emily Maitlis's revelations. So cut to Laura Koonsberg. I'm sure you all know she was the political editor for the BBC. In fact, she was the first woman to hold that position. She took over from Nick Robinson, but she stepped down quite recently. She stepped down in May 2022, and now she's been given her own new show on the BBC, which launched on Sunday morning, to be precise. Sunday just gone. Now, what's quite interesting about Laura Koonsberg is that she has got a bit of a reputation as what you might call a client journalist, and specifically on Twitter, I mean, there have been endless memes of her looking sort of drippily at Johnson in the past, sort of insinuating that she's very biased. But for balance, I do feel it's important to add, because I've never met her, and amongst some of her peers, she has a very different reputation. She does have a lot of credit as being very hardworking and someone who does really care about the truth.
Yeah, and look, I don't want to detract from that. She certainly has some strong points, has some highlights. But for me, and I'm sure for many of our listeners, she lost credibility in recent years because it felt like she ceased being a journalist and she just became, like, I don't know, a parrot, because she became very cozy with Number 10 and became the queen of reporting as fact statements from what were always termed unnamed government sources, which basically just means any old bollocks that her pals at Number 10 wanted her to put out. So as an example, do you remember when Cummings went to Barnard Castle and, you know,
how unequivocally, could we forget?
Yeah. I know, unequivocally, you couldn't debate it, he broke lockdown rules. Well, Laura Koonsberg reported, source says his trip was within guidelines as Cummings went to stay with his parents so they could help with the childcare while he and his wife were sick. They insist no breach of lockdown. This is just one example, but there were loads of these. This is just total undiluted bollocks, as we all know, right? And really, we should expect far better from our top flight journalists. There's a journalism tutor, Sally Clare, her name is, and this is a quote from her, which I think is just so spot on. If someone says it's raining and another person says it's dry, it's not your job to quote them both. Your job is to look out the effing window and find out which is true. Take note, Laura Koonsberg.
Yeah, that is an absolutely fantastic quote. Perhaps every journalist should have it tattooed on their face. So, okay, yeah, true. Either way, she's got her own new flagship politics show. And she did manage to land an interview with Truss. And it was, I wasn't sort of that interested in looking at the show, to be honest with you.
No.
But it turns out it was well worth a watch because it was gobsmacking, potentially for all the wrong or right reasons. So here's a clip that I tweeted, which is a little snippet from the Truss interview. But before you hear it for context, I want you to remember that Truss is saying to look at everything through the lens of redistribution is wrong at a time when the UK has a record number of billionaires, 177 to be precise, and normal people can't afford to live.
But to look at everything through the lens of redistribution, I believe is wrong. Because what I'm about is about growing the economy. And growing the economy benefits everybody.
But you're happy
with... But this is a really important point because so far, the economic debate for the past 20 years has been dominated by discussions about distribution. But and what's happened is we have had relatively low growth.
Ugh. I mean, unreal. Liz Truss there just perpetuating the trickle-down economics fairy tale that the Tories just love to tell us. And for the benefit of our listeners, by the way, during the course of that interview, Liz Truss is actually sat in front of this whopping great big table, which at Mirror Politics tweeted about, saying, Liz Truss today proclaimed her tax cuts are fair while sitting in front of a big graph that said they'll give the rich 235 times more than the poor. And they were right. If you look at this massive big graph, which is from the Institute of Fiscal Studies, it shows that her planned national insurance cuts are going to benefit the richest by £1,801 and the poorest by £7.66. Russ in Cheshire tweeted, she's not only wrong, but she's been proven wrong by a 12-year experiment. Since 2010, the Tories have tried cutting tax to grow the economy, and every time they have failed to meet their growth predictions. Every single time. Osborne did it annually from 2010 to 2016. And our lovely Hugh Grant responded to Russ saying, except I don't believe trickle-down was ever a motive. Real motive was obliging affluent Tory voters, and above all, donors. They know no other motive.
Couldn't agree more. What I will add to that, I hate this trickle down because to me, there's something actually slightly apt about it anyway. So it's almost like you've got this tsunami of water at the top, you know, this absolute tidal wave of water. And then the little surfs at the bottom might get a drip if their pipes are leaking, except we don't, do we? I just wanted to quickly say, I've been reflecting what you were saying about Laura Koonsberg. This is what my brain does. It catches up 5 minutes later. You know, I think part of the problem is that journalists are so keen to get the first person on Twitter to say something that that was the other problem is that sometimes sources say, and it hasn't been checked. So back in the old days, you know, when it was just a daily newspaper, everything was checked and checked and checked. So that's the other thing I want to say on that.
Yeah, it's about access, isn't it? So they want access to number 10 Downing Street. So they will put out favourable, you know, sources of information. It's just nonsense. Yeah. It's just
Gary said, you know, Karen
exactly.
said.
Gary. There's a dying name, isn't it?
There's no Garys actually in number 10, and it is a dying name. Apparently there were no Garys or Nigels named last year.
Wasn't Grant Shapps a Gary at one point? He's had a few names. No?
Has he changed his name from Gary to Grant?
No, don't you know he's had loads of names when he was
I did not know that.
Yeah, so he's had three different names. I'm sure our listeners will know. Sebastian Fox. Basically, he used to be like a pyramid. Oh, you've got to look into this. He was a pyramid salesman, like basically some dodgy salesman, and he had three different names. One of them was Michael Green, and there's actually a picture on the internet that you can find which has a picture of Grant Shapps with a label, a name label, which says Michael Green.
Yeah, no, so he's like trickle down names. So you start with Sebastian and then you go Michael and then you go Grant and then you go Gary. Trickle down.
Yeah, in fact, I've got really, I've got a joke about trickle down economics.
Come on then.
I've got a joke about trickle down economics, but 99% of you will never get it.
Now, we're not allowed to say that's a dad joke, are we? Because that's sexist. So I'm going to say that's a mum joke.
Yeah, go for it.
It really made me laugh under, I think it was Hugh Grant's response on Twitter. The wheel turns at Simon Leg X said, the people of Britain need to do a check on their supply of pitchforks.
Oh, gosh.
And also, as Truss's interview, which was her sitting there basically with huge scientific and graphic evidence that she was going to make people worse off and wanging on about how great that was. Oh, no, I've said wanging on. Oh, no. On Twitter, one of our listeners was like, oh, you, let's give it 5 minutes before you say wanging on. I've said it. Who cares? Anyway, as her interview drew to a close, there was Charlie Watts, who's at Noel Wheater, who's a community reporter's editor. He described on Twitter how there was a surprise applause from Joe Lycett. That's right, that's comedian Joe Lycett, who was booked as a panellist. And here is that surprise applause, just in case you missed it.
Thank you so much for coming in. And whatever happens, do come back. Well, I was going to say, going for some reaction from our panel, because listening to that interview at the desk and seeming to applaud Joe Lycett, the comedian, Cleo Watson, who has lots and lots of experience in Number 10, because she worked for Theresa May and Boris Johnson. Now, Joe, I'm going to let you calm down a bit before I ask you what you thought
of it. I love
it.
Well done, Liz.
Okay, so that was the start of a section of the show that the producers and definitely Laura Koonsberg hadn't anticipated. Joe Lycett was bloody genius. Here's him in full sarcastic flow. And the clip was tweeted by New Rudian at Bearded Genius is the handle, amongst others. I mean, at the last time I looked at it, it had like 7.5 million views, so you've probably seen it. But this guy captioned it, big fan of Joe Lycett refusing to take an unserious person seriously.
I think, you know, the haters will say that you've had 12 years of the Tories and that we're sort of at the dregs of what they've got available and that Liz Truss is sort of like the backwash of the available MPs. I wouldn't say that because I'm incredibly right-wing, but some people might say that.
But the consensus, though, in politics is often wrong, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's often wrong and we often don't know what is going to pan out.
Yeah. Well, as Liz said there, she said she would be wrong to predict the future, even though loads of people have predicted that we're going to have real issues with paying our energy bills. But, you know, I think she's right to just then just sort of basically say, well, let's not predict and see what happens next week.
Okay.
I think she did the right thing there.
Well, let's talk about something.
Oh, it's just genius. In fact, it took me a while to appreciate just how truly beautiful and genius it was. So think about it, right? Think about how Joe has managed to really anger Tories there, the right-wing press. I mean, the Direct Mail even whined about it on their front page. But what did he actually do, right? He praised her. He just said positive things. He showed his admiration for her. He basically said what any Tory MP, minister or client journo would have said if sat in his chair. And yet they were furious at it. And like Laura Koonsberg, she even asked him to be serious. It was just genius.
I know. I loved it too, because you know that one of my worst sayings is, well, sticks and stones may break your bones, but words will never hurt you. It was absolute shite. I mean, we've all had somebody say something to us in the, you know, which has hurt our feelings or has like never left us because it really got to us. You know, I do a lot of writing. I know you do too. Words are powerful. And what he did there was he weaponized humor. He used comedy in the best way. And exactly as you say, all he was doing was just saying what they all say, but in a sarcastic voice. And suddenly you see how ridiculous it is. I mean, incredible. So somebody who was definitely not happy on Twitter was a guy called Rob Burley, at Rob Burl. So he's the executive editor of Tonight with Andrew Marr, or at least he was. And he was so unimpressed and I was absolutely loving it. He was so triggered. He was as triggered as Piers Morgan used to get about Meghan Markle, that kind of triggered. And he tweeted, the case for Joe Lycett's reaction to Liz Truss as some sort of genius art terrorism is that she said nothing and his response cleverly highlighted this. But she said something very significant by rejecting redistribution and saying tax cuts helping the rich were fair. But by whooping and clapping and being silly, this slightly jaw-dropping comment from Truss was obscured, but it made Truss's critics happy for some reason. He doesn't really get it, does he?
I mean, no, Rob didn't seem to get it at all, and the backlash on Twitter was a joy to behold. So Sid, at Hurt Sid, tweeted, really don't want to hear from folk concerned about the appropriateness of putting Joe Lycett on a political panel show, given none of them batted an eyelid when Boris Johnson's entire family were given television slots and radio shows to present. It's a very good point. And Mitch Benn tweeted, "What is very telling about the Joe Lycett clip is that nobody thinks for a second that he's being sincere, because in order to believe the things he says, you'd have to be startlingly stupid. And yet, the things he says are the things we are all now expected to believe." I mean, brilliant, so on the money. And Justin Lewis at When Is Births, I mean, what are these Twitter handles, people? He tweeted, "Sorry, but no. You want trivia? The dozens of Tuftons you book every week, the continued exposure for failed MP Farage, the mysterious hold the Taxpayers Alliance held over you all this is trivia, and dangerous trivia. And they're why we're in this mess, not because of a comic."
Also spot on, Simon Harris at SimonHarris_MBD said, "A lot of people are angrier about Joe Lycett being on a BBC politics show once than they were about Nigel Farage being on Question Time 34 times, though he's never been elected MP. And Steve Bullock as well. Oh, I have to be careful how you say that one. Bullock at Guitar Moog Music said, "Appalling that someone would go on a politics TV show and say things he knew were untrue just to satirise the media. The correct reason to go on TV and knowingly lie is to get millions of people to vote against their own interests." Absolutely bang on the money.
So, all our listeners will by now probably know that Liz Truss is our new PM.
Wait a minute. I've got one half-open party popper. I've got a tiny little drop of wine at the end of a bottle with a bit of backwash.
I've got an old pack of Twiglets. Shall I open them in celebration?
Are they a bit soft and a bit off? I've got two ginger nut biscuits at the back of a packet that have like crumped. Yeah, anyway, we could go on, couldn't we?
Oh God, it's so crap, isn't it? Anyway, the jury is in on her first speech, and let's be honest. I mean, you touched upon it at the beginning, Gemma, but blimey, it was so low energy, wasn't it? I mean, it was very bland. It was very uninspiring. It was basically very Truss. Kate McCann, so she's political editor from Talk TV. She tweeted, "As Truss thanks Boris Johnson and talks up his record, she pauses for applause, which didn't come quickly. And when it does, it's hardly hearty. Fairly sure someone laughed as she said the campaign showed the breadth and depth of the talent in the party." It did, didn't it? It really did show us the breadth and depth of talent in the party.
Yeah.
Oh, and Paul Brand from ITV tweeted, "Liz Truss plays tribute to Boris Johnson. She says, you're admired from Kiev to Carlisle. There is a very awkward pause before the audience realise that they are supposed to applaud." And no, he isn't admired, you bell. He really isn't. Frances O'Grady, General Secretary of the TUC, she tweeted, "Liz Truss got 47% of eligible Tory members. She wouldn't meet the threshold that ministers set for union members voting on strike action." And this is the wild thing, right? She has got no public mandate. She has not even got a mandate from her Tory MPs, Gemma. Right. So if we go back and we look at the numbers, just 50 of them, right? That's less than a seventh of the parliamentary party voted for her in the first round. Less than a third voted for her in the fifth round. She's the first Conservative to become Prime Minister without the support of a majority of her parliamentary party. And also note there were rounds, right? We had, I think it was five rounds in total to get our new PM. Multiple rounds of voting. Do you know why? Because not even the Tory party will use first past the post as a system, a voting system to elect their PM. Because they know it ends up giving you a PM that most people didn't want. But hey, first past the post, it's good enough for Belarus. It's good enough for us. I just, they have it.
I think there was some tweet, I can't remember who it was by, unfortunately, but they pointed out that Count Binface got more votes in the general election than Liz Truss had to make her PM.
I'd much prefer not Count Binface.
Also, there was another tweet I saw, Sam Friedman at SamFR. He said, and I thought it was great, if I were her, I'd have started with, finally, the power to do something about pork markets, really lean into it. Because, you know, it's quite funny. My daughter, that's the thing she knows, I think probably off TikTok, is that amazing pork markets moment. Mm. That is now who is at the helm. And she's started now, hasn't she, to unleash her plans. Yes. And, you know, I have to say, being very cynical, I was like, okay, she's going to come out guns blazing and she's going to actually make sure that nobody falls into destitution to get a huge bounce in the polls, apart from anything else, and also so that the country doesn't become third world. But there's huge flaws. So she has done that. She's going to come out and, you know, announce this huge measure to save us all. But if you really get into the nitty gritty, it's absolutely unbelievable. No windfall tax, no eating into the huge profits of the energy firms. No. Basically, us mugs are just going to pay off these massive, massive, overly inflated bills so pretty much for the rest of our lives. That's how it works. Gordon Brown, I mean, Labour went much further. They have suggested a windfall tax and price caps. Gordon Brown was far more inventive and clever, actually, with what he suggested, which would be essentially the way it would do is we would be paying money to buy shares in the energy companies so that by the end of it, we own the energy companies and sort of nationalise in that way. Yeah. It was really inventive.
Yeah. We're basically she's going to take out billions and billions in extra borrowing to ensure that the energy firms can continue to cash in. It's like, it's obscene. Absolutely. Yeah. Don't forget the links again. I'm always talking about this, but the links between the Conservative Party and the energy firm donors and all the lords that have got shares in these energy firms. Liz Truss was on the board of Shell, I believe. Like, it's just so incestuous. Oh, anyway, I mean, she's got other plans. Oh, wonderful. Other plans. Don't forget she's got her bonfire of EU regulations. How many bonfires have we had, by the way? And she wants to crush trade unions, a bit like her heroine, Maggie Thatcher, and, you know, get rid of the rights to strike. I think we're going to join Russia as well as one of the only other countries to withdraw from the European Convention of Human Rights. We've got that.
This is all looking very Dickensian far. Super, super.
Tax cuts for the rich.
Yay. I've been so worried about the billionaires.
I know I have.
How are they coping?
Well, look, as long as they're fine, because what that does mean is that there'll be less investment in services like NHS, things we don't need, you know, like NHS, social care, schools.
Yay.
You'll also be pleased to hear, Gemma, that she's going ahead with the Rwanda plan.
Super, super. Yeah. I love empty planes flying off to far-flung countries that nobody's allowed to go to legally. And it's sort of like really immoral and foul. Great, good. And it's solved nothing. More people coming than ever before. Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah, she's also got... did anyone notice the absence of anything in her speeches or her plans relating to climate change or anything green?
No,
in fact,
don't be silly.
No,
it's only the planet.
Oh, it's not a priority, darling. It's not a priority.
No, darling.
Instead, what she's going to do is lift the ban on fracking.
Mm. Oh, great. Great.
And, you know, commission a load of new fossil fuel projects in the North Sea.
All right, I tell you someone who'll be happy about that, because I've argued with Mike Parry about that. He loves a bit of fracking. He's bang up for that. Maybe they could send him out to do it himself.
I did this as well. Just this week, I argued with Mike Parry again about this on Jeremy Vine. He said, fracking is going to save us. Like, Gemma, how do you deal with this? Like,
I don't know.
It took me, honestly, a half an hour in total to find out that fracking is the biggest red herring ever.
Yeah.
So for our listeners, just 3 points to take away on fracking, right? Quadrilla is this firm, that it's a fracking firm, right? And by their own account, it would take 50 years and 20,000 wells to extract a maximum of 10% of shale gas via fracking, right? 20,000 wells. Do you know how many wells they've got at the moment?
I dread to think they close them all.
They have two. They have two wells. Good. We would need 20,000 even to get a maximum of 10%. And the amount of shale gas that people claim is just under our feet is massively overinflated. And even if the shale gas did exist, the depth of shale makes it unlikely we'd get enough to even meet 5 years UK demand alone. And this takes 5 minutes. This was reported in The Guardian, and I tweeted about it, and someone responded saying, you know, the lefty Guardian would say that. But then I was like, I actually responded to them and said, please look behind the article. Look at the source of the data, which is fully independent. It comes from the British Geological Survey. They are independent. Why not believe them? Or, you know, carry on just believing Trump.
Mike Liz Parry.
Mike Parry, expert Mike Parry, Nigel Farage and Energy Boss Shells. And then also another thing I read, which was quite terrifying. In 2019, Blackpool experienced a 2.9% magnitude quake, basically an earthquake, believed to be the biggest fracking-related tremor seen in Britain. And it was triggered by the UK's only active fracking site, which is that Quadrilla that I mentioned earlier. So now, buckle up, literally, buckle up.
Literally, yeah, exactly. And for the record, I did a bit of research on wind power and the complete polar opposite. I mean, they're never going to go for it because, God forbid, those oil companies and those shills don't get their donations. Excuse me, I'm a little bit fruity there. But the point is, the Tories put through legislation to stop wind,
Turbines.
Thank you. Thank you. Searching for that word. Wind turbines. So you can basically only really put them offshore because people think they're unsightly. Well, I'm sorry. At a time when we need to be energy independent, not relying on getting energy from an authoritarian like Putin, but also saving the planet and going to clean energy, which is wind, which is solar. You could whack them up and it could be temporary. You could put them all the way down the sides of motorways. And something like one go round of those turbines would basically sort a house out for a really long time. So if you lived in an idealistic utopia, you could become energy independent pretty quickly with a clean source of energy. Yes, you'd have those big windmills down the side of the motorway. Frankly, that would be fine. In the meantime, you could be building some nuclear power stations. They take about 5-6 years. I mean, yeah. Why does it all have to be so complicated?
Why would we go for utopia when we can have Tory dystopia?
Well, exactly. And you know, you say these things like I've just expressed, and obviously I'm really simplifying it, but you could, when COVID happened and the government finally realised, oh shit, how quickly did they get their act together to implement a lockdown, whatever anybody thought about that, vaccinations, like got the army involved, didn't they? Or implementing furlough. They did it in about 2 days. Big things can happen if people are motivated to do them. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'll tell you who wasn't impressed as well. Just hasn't been impressed all week. Not only us. We're having a right old whinge today, aren't we? But you know what? Hopefully, listener, you get it. You know, it's just better out than in, isn't it? So Liz Truss, not only is she just a complete, she's a natural disaster. She is a natural disaster.
Can we harness her energy?
Oh, God, I don't know. I think you'd get, what would you get? What would you get? Just like, you know, a bit of old gas. She's announced her cabinet and it's looking terrifying, folks. It's looking really shit. Sarah Murphy, who we've mentioned before on here, she's a great, really worth a follow, said Truss's proposed cabinet is grim. Of course it is. That's the Tory party now. Great offices of state reduced to the apprentice losers cafe, where pumped up non-entities and total shits sit around plotting who they can blame and backstab for the mess that they've made of everything. And then there was one more tweet that we really must share. It was from Joe Lycett, and he simply wrote, yes, Liz Truss, absolutely smashed it, babe.
Right, that's enough fun.
Have we had any fun yet?
I know. I'm about to darken the mood a bit. I'm really sorry.
Christ.
I know.
Okay.
But I need to, right, in order to alert you to something that won't be discussed very much while people are, you know, very rightly focused on getting through the cost of living crisis. And that is what we touched upon earlier, that bonfire of EU regulations that Liz Truss has planned. So there was a piece in the Times this week on how Liz Truss is preparing to shake up Britain's post-Brexit employment rights as part of her agenda to kickstart the economy.
Which barrister, is baffling in itself, isn't it?
Barrister and political commentator Rupert Myers posted the article with the question, are we shifting away from continental and towards a more American employment system? And this is where I really wish people could start paying attention and understanding what this bonfire of EU regulations means. It is a bonfire of our rights, people. It's our consumer rights, it's our human rights, our environmental regulations. Hello, sewage. Like, why do you think we've seen so much shit pumped into our water since we left the EU? Like, these regulations that she wants to, you know, take a gas canister and a match to, they are all there to protect us from reckless, inhumane, immoral profiteering and exploitation. And this is really a huge cause for concern.
It absolutely is. This idea that taking away people's rights, in whether they're human rights, working rights, whatever, is going to create more growth is a fallacy unless you are intending very deliberately to turn us into a completely different country. And, you know, really, like, you know, remember they used to moot Singapore on sea? Or, you know, they've got always had this idea about, you know, what we don't want is cheap labour from overseas. Well, what you want Brits suddenly to work all hours that God sends that in conditions that aren't safe. Mm-hmm. How? You're talking, I mean, I know I'm like the queen of hyperbole, but like, basically, what, you're going back to workhouses?
Yeah.
Like, what, you know, these are rights that have been hard won over years. They have accumulated as progression has been made in society. So improving people's lives is a good thing. And that improves the health of people. That is why we live longer. Taking them away is going backwards. How anybody can see that as a good thing is beyond me.
I know. Thankfully, there were lots of tweets on Twitter, as Twitter did seem to cotton onto it, although we've got to remind ourselves, Twitter is not the real world. But no. Lots of tweets regarding, you know, what might lie ahead. David_Osland, who's a political journalist, said simply, the headline, Truss Eyes Bonfire of Workers' Rights, should concern everybody who works for a living. Mandy McCauley at Mandy_McCauley wrote, investigative reporter tweeted unions on collision course with Liz Truss as she prepares to review existing EU workers' protections, including the 48-hour working week, holiday entitlement, pay and basic working conditions in bid to boost the competitiveness of the UK economy.
It's dark. It's dark. Vaughan Gething at Vaughan Gething, Welsh Labour and Co-op member of the Senedd for Cardiff South and Penrith, tweeted, shocking, insulting and bad for our economy. A Truss government would attack breaks, holidays and the working time directive. I can't imagine a worse time to pick this fight. No political gain ever justifies making working people worse off.
And don't forget, right, Liz Truss is the woman who co-authored the book Britannia Unchained, which referred to British workers among the worst idlers in the world. This is her cure for that, listeners, setting our rights alight. And I tweeted about this because I'm so desperate for it to land, right? Because what my fear is that in a few years' time, there'll be a conversation in an office or a factory or somewhere at work, and someone won't believe it. They'll incredulously say to their colleague or whoever, you know, they just fired me like that, or they won't pay my overtime, or I don't get it. I get no sick pay. And they'll say they don't understand why. And eventually someone will explain to them, this is all thanks to Brexit.
But don't worry, Marina, because I feel like this is, we should like give this out with Prozac this episode.
I know. I feel like I have to apologise. I'm really sorry. And I'm also really bunged up and congested, by the way. I'm sorry, listeners. I've got this thing called pregnancy rheumatitis, which just means I've got a bogey nose constantly. So I really apologise.
It doesn't sound too bad.
Really?
No, that's amazing. Like pregnancy. Does it basically mean the baby's like lying on your snot box?
I've got no idea. Boss, yes, that's exactly what the doctor would be expecting.
I'm not a doctor, can you tell? I tell you who is, I think, a doctor, Therese Coffey. Therese Coffey. She's been made health minister. That's good.
Just Gemma, before we go into the incoming government of superstars, can we just, I know you talked about it at the beginning, but Boris Johnson's outgoing speech, well, I'm still dry heaving from, right? I can't believe he stood outside number 10 and he just spouted pure lies. It was bollocks. Just bollocks. Yeah. He said he reformed social care.
Yeah, that was the bit where it had me like punching the wall like Tom Cruise in a film.
Can someone confirm what he meant by that? Listeners, can you tweet us, DM me, what the hell did he mean? What did he reform social care? Was it when they sent elderly people with COVID back into care homes, killing tens of thousands? Did he reform it when they crippled the labour market, meaning record vacancies and threadbare care? Which bit? And then he said, oh God, the narcissist that he is. He said he was a booster rocket that has, I quote, fulfilled its function. You sure, mate? Because what function was that? Was it collapsing the NHS? Was it overseeing 200,000 COVID deaths? Shattering the economy? God, give me strength, Gemma.
Do you know what? I wish he was a booster rocket. We could shove him in space.
Do you know what else I found out this week?
What?
I found this, right, in one of the penultimate paragraphs of a BBC article on what Johnson will do next. And sadly, it's not skyrocket into, you know, the oblivion. Yeah. In this country, we have this thing. It's called a public duty cost allowance. Mm. It was brought in by a Tory government. And what it means is that any exiting PM can claim... Wait for it.
What? Yeah, well, I'm actually on tenterhooks. What's he done now?
No, this is something going forward that he can do. Any exiting PM can claim up to £115,000 per year ongoing
of
taxpayers' money to help them, I quote, this is from the government website, fulfil public duties. David Cameron, for example, has claimed over 300,000 of this since leaving public office. And I'm not being partisan here because... Tony Blair has claimed it as well. This policy was introduced by John Major's government. So what the frig? 115K when you've left office? I think we are mugs in this country. We are mugs.
When you've left office and you're getting massive amounts of money for like after dinner speeches, which by the way, no thanks, don't want to hear one of those. And, writing your rubbish memoirs. Mm. That's ridiculous. Can I go back to an old employer then and just say, can you just keep paying me? Because that's what that is.
Try it.
Can I just keep taking my salary even though I'm not working for you or doing anything in that role anymore? Unbelievable. Anyway, honestly, we had a great tweet here. Countdown's Dictionary Corner panelist wrote, word of the day is zugzwang, or I think you pronounce it zugzwang. It's a situation in chess and life in which a move must be made, but each possible one will make the situation worse. Now, I actually did a tweet about this the other day because I suddenly was like, oh, this is really confusing me because I'm like, Boris Johnson's gone. Hallelujah. Like, you know, it's raining men. Ooh, Saturday. And then I'm like, but now it's Liz Truss. And I was like deflated again.
Gemma, and then soundtrack I was like, of happy songs.
Happy songs. And then I'm like, Dominic Raab's gone. Yay! Grease lightning, oh, grease lightning. And then I'm like, oh, but it's Brandon Lewis.
No, Brandon Lewis, by the way, as Justice Secretary. I mean, who better to appoint as Justice Secretary than the man who was happy to break international law in a specific and limited way?
Oh, Christ. And then I'm like, Priti Patel's gone. Celebrate good times. Come on. Yeah. Did a little kick, little jig. And then I'm like, oh, my actual freaking God, Suella Braverman's coming in. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Da-da-da. Oh, da-da.
We should have that music from The Omen.
Da-da-da-da. Oh, can I just say, you know, Ben and Jerry's are like brilliant because they just make their politics really clear and it clearly does not affect the sales of their delicious ice cream. So they actually put congratulations on the new job, Suella Braverman. to-do list, scrap the Rwanda plan, introduce safe routes to the UK for people seeking asylum, coffee break, schedule meeting with people with lived experience of the UK's asylum system, ice cream break, lift the ban and give people seeking asylum the right to work. That would be dreamy, wouldn't it?
I mean, it's a nice plan, Ben and Jerry, but don't hold your breath. But honestly,
go on.
No, just on Suella Braverman. Is it Braverman or Braverman?
It's Brave Bellend.
Brave Bellend. Don't forget, right, this is the woman who told a nationwide Question Time audience that paying a divorce bill to the EU was Project Fear. And yet, as reported by The Telegraph, this year alone we're paying £9.4 billion, and then we still owe another £26.6 billion. That is such a massive error. So yeah,
she's
big.
The one as well. We had it in another episode. I'm sure she was clopping down the road talking about how it's absolutely awful because people really choose to be on welfare and she's going to eliminate that. And it's like, no, well, A, no, they don't. And B, absolutely masses of those who are claiming already have jobs. You freak.
Can you imagine making that size of error at work? It's like over £30 billion that you just told people wouldn't happen that you haven't put the bill
for. Not without being thrown into prison.
No, exactly. And guess what? She's been promoted to Home Secretary.
Imagine being able to find someone more authoritarian, dangerous, and savage than Priti Patel. It's
they
incredible.
They did it.
And then, Marina, I tried to be happy again. I gave it a go. I was like, oh my God, Nadine Dorries isn't culture secretary anymore. Freak out. And then I had to take off my silver suit because she's been given a peerage by Boris Johnson. She's going into the House of Lords for all eternity.
She can be our Lord of the Week. Indefinite Lord of the Week, basically, isn't she? She's just going to... And there's also a lesser role, but there's a new DEFRA secretary. His name is Ranil Jawardena. And he put out this tweet... Great news. Trade barriers have been lifted in Mongolia for British poultry and fish exporters, with our farmers now supplying chicken to @KFC Mongolia. Chicken emoji, graph emoji. This offers exciting opportunities for our farmers to sell into a £10 million market. Right, three things on this, listeners. One, this tweet is not satire. Two, we left our EU market of half a billion people and we're celebrating selling to a country with 3 million people. And three, there are 11 KFCs in Mongolia.
How have they even got the balls to tweet that without seeing how pathetic and shit that is? Unbelievable. I think we're saving the worst to last, aren't we? Yeah. I actually can hardly bear it. So Rees-Mogg, the Victorian pencil, everybody's favourite proponent of workhouses and Keynesian lifestyle. He goes from Minister of Brexit Opportunities, hey, not that he's found any, to Secretary of State for Business, Energy and Industry. This means climate, everybody. This means environment. Help.
This is the man, Rees-Mogg, just 8 months ago, he said a change of leader should result in a general election. Now, don't take my word for it, folks. Hear it from the horse's mouth yourselves.
So my view is the change of leader requires a general election.
Ugh.
He's never right about anything, sorry. He just says utter bollocks. There's never any repercussions for it. This is a man whose Brexit crippled businesses, decimated entire industries. This is a man who denies climate change and he thinks fracking and plundering for fossil fuels will solve our energy crisis. He has got massive conflicts of interest thanks to, as reported by The Guardian, the fact that he is allegedly, well, no, I say allegedly, I think it's fairly, you know, certain, but an investor in oil and coal mining through Somerset Capital Management, which is the fund management firm he co-founded and still benefits from financially. How is that not a glaring conflict of interest? And this is the man who Liz Truss has put in charge of business, industry and energy.
I mean, it's obvious, isn't it? Obvious appointment.
I mean, why wouldn't you? But also, yeah. I think the biggest concern that we all have is, you know, who's going to take over as Minister for Brexit Opportunities, Gemma?
Well, I think we found them all, haven't we?
Have we?
I don't know. I think so.
So was that it then? Pyre, yeah. Suction, vacuum cleaners, and getting rid of the funny numbers in the Dartford Tunnel. Was that it?
Yeah, that's it.
Job done.
That's Brexit. Got it done, even though it's not done. Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. I wonder how much we paid him to come up with those Brexit breakthroughs. what a completely ridiculous, disastrous, and actually mega insulting appointment that is.
Oh, speaking of ridiculous appointments, have we got a Lord of the Week? You know, so just quickly, I was in the car with my friend Nigel, and we went to spin. And he said, I've been listening to your podcast. I put it on when I'm cleaning. I was like, this is good. And he said, I love the bit about Lord of the Week. He said, I love last week's Lord. What was he called? Lord Bumcrack. And I was like, no, he was called Lord Crudders. And he was like, that was it. I was like, how have you managed to get from Crudders to Bumcrack? Although, fair.
That's next week's
next Lord. Lord Bumcrack has become head of education.
Oh, we do have Lord of the Week, Gemma. And good. This week's Lord, I'm not going to sing it, you do much better than me, goes to Lord True CBE. And yes, that is his name. One tweeter who calls himself Farage's Amazon Echo tweeted, sadly, Lord False was unavailable. And he's actually been given a new role too. So he is now Lord Privy Seal and Leader of the House of Lords. So Lord True, this week in the House of Lords, basically the subject of the PM and Chris Pincher came up. Now, don't forget that Chris Pincher was the straw that broke the camel's back, right? When it was found out that Johnson still went ahead and hired him, then lied about it after knowing he had a penchant for groping people. Nice.
Mm.
Basically, as tweeted by at Best for Britain, Lord True stood up in the House of Lords and asked fellow lords to give Pincher some credit. For now, for not sexually assaulting anyone since the whole debacle happened a mere 7 months ago.
Well, to be fair, I haven't sexually assaulted anybody for 7 months either. So I think I should have a bloody medal. Christ almighty, Marina. These people, where do they find them? In the dungeons. They drag them out of the... I think they go to the Tower of London. There's a secret dungeon. And when they just need someone new, they just get them out of there.
I know. I do wonder, we have Lord of the Week. I was like, are we going to be able to top this next week? And guess what? We always do.
Now, remember last week we had lots of brilliant tweets by people mocking this new awful wave of people, you know, going on about how being freezing cold this winter is absolutely no biggie. Just stick a jumper on, burn some Brexit pamphlets, you'll all be fine. And Edwina Curry absolutely outdid herself on GMB the other day. So I shoved a clip on Twitter and it was the responses that were so fantastic. But first, listen to this.
Here's one of my suggestions for a tip, something that's dirt cheap. Martin knows about this sort of thing. If you put some of this behind your radiators, it really works. It makes the whole room nice and warm, and it means that you can turn down your thermostat without it causing you any more discomfort. I mean, you know, Martin, Susanna, most people my age have lived in houses without central heating, but we are dependent on it now. And just that kind of little thing makes such a difference. Moving the sofa away from the radiator. You don't want to be heating the sofa. You want to be heating the room.
I mean, it's absolutely incredible that we've reached a point where you've got people like Edwina Curry coming on and channeling like Dame Vera Lynn energy, almost as if Britain's on a war footing. That's where we've got to. That's how bad things are. She's coming going, don't worry, everybody, better tinfoil down the sofa and all be well. Deluded. Deluded.com.
Twitter comments were brilliant. So Alan Hale at Alan3753 Hale. What an amazing Twitter handle. Wow, with this and Boris's kettle idea, we are saving thousands. Please keep these amazing tips coming. And Dan Cheery at the_Chezza responded, pray for Martin Lewis. And then my favourite one was Dave Lawrence at Day43Law, who said, has she got to the bit where to keep warm you jump into bed with a PM yet?
That's alluding to the affair that she had with John Major. Saucy man. Saucy man. Newton Grunion said, And I'll show freezing pensioners how to keep warm using an old squeezy bottle, some sticky black plastic and a pair of Ann Widdecombe's knickers. And then Ashen at Unluxter said, oh, that's right. So I need to move my sofa to the other side of my massive lounge. And I did think it was just like pictures of people trying to shift the sofa. And then Mr. H at The Fishy Taste said, we used to live in caves. I'm in my 50s. I really hope this isn't what I have to look forward to, being an out-of-touch tit. And the Martin Lewis reference was the fact that Martin Lewis was presenting that day. And while she was talking, he literally was on the desk, sort of rocking with his head in his hands.
Despairing.
Because fair enough. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, we are all praying for you, Martin Lewis. Okay, underrated tweet of the week this week is absolutely incredible. And I'm actually going to go into my phone live, everybody, and find the thread, because it's more a thread and a person than an actual tweet. So what this is obviously, well, not obviously, but names get taken up on Twitter, hence some of the amazing handles that we've had
John
today.
John3433_
Exactly. So our wonderful new PM, Liz Truss, her handle is @TrussLiz. There is, however, a very different Liz who's already taken the handle @LizTruss. She's called Liz Trussell. She doesn't even have a bio. As far as I can work out, she's just, you know, a normal lady living her life. And in fact, until the other day, she hadn't tweeted for years. She also had very, very like average amount of followers, like a couple of hundred or something. She's gone up to 17.8 thousand followers because what happened was the new prime minister came in and the great and the good are tagging her in by a mistake. And instead of just ignoring it, Liz Trussell, who quite frankly, I wish was prime minister, has been getting involved. So for instance, she's put, phew, what a day, which is the day that she was in. And somebody tagged her in and said, your invite for tea should be in the mail. And she's put, thanks, I'll bring the cake. And I think Caroline Lucas was absolutely livid the other day about Jacob Rees-Mogg being appointed. And she answered to that. Very funny. Excellent speech by Liz Truss, said the Unius Scottish and British Twitter account. Thanks, doll. Lance Foreman said, lovely to see the PM pleased with her achievement, and the little smile made that clear. Liz Truss should be pleased. She'll be a great PM. People underestimate her at their peril. And Liz Trussell put, I am and I will.
Oh, what a good sport. That's not going to go away, is it?
It's not going to go away. And then there was an absolute brilliant one. Congratulations, Liz Truss. Welcome to Kenya. Looking forward to building resilient bilateral relations with the UK for a more competitive world. And she's put, lovely. I'll keep my eye out for the big five.
She's probably on it more than the cabinet ministers and more than the PM.
She has. The New York Times put Liz Truss becomes Britain's third female prime minister after meeting Queen Elizabeth II at Balmoral Castle. And she's put, and somebody's put underneath, prime ministers can't use their clout for personal gain, but that shouldn't stop Liz Truss from doing so. And she's put, I'm going to Vegas.
I have to follow her now.
Yeah, she's like great. Fun. She's great.
Well, I think we need to wrap up there, Gemma, and not just complete on like we've been doing for the last few weeks and just going longer and longer and longer.
Yeah, I know. And everybody keep the faith. Mm. You know, we'll be back next week just with hopefully some levity now that we've all recovered from the shock of the unveiling of the cabinet and everything, you know.
It's we not just need to anything,
okay, yeah, a lot can happen, that's true. Have you got a pudding for us though, Marina?
I do. I think we need it. In fact, I think we need more, and we deserve more than pudding. I know I need a stiff drink and I can't even have one. But here it is, and it's author and Byline Times writer Otto English giving his final thoughts, his sayonara, to our great leader, Boris Johnson.
So farewell then, Boris Johnson. The party's over, the game is up. You can slink off now and write your memoirs and grow rich while the rest of us worry about how we're going to heat our homes. You got your childhood dream. You were king of the world, albeit briefly, following in the shoes of your hero, Winston Churchill. But you were no Winston Churchill. You came to office promising to get Brexit done as if it was a turd that could simply be flushed away. Well, Brexit isn't done and never will be. It's a bloody mess, which, like every mess in your Bullingdon mindset, is left for other people to clear up. You never even really believed in it in the first place. It was just some parlour game, a gamble with 65 million other people's lives that you knew would never affect you. And then, given the opportunity to lead this country through the greatest crisis since the Second World War, you blew it. In a job that you were never cut out for, despite what your media lackeys may have made us believe, your very worst traits of incompetence, laziness, arrogance, and that pathetic need to be loved came to the fore. As the coronavirus crept to the very door of Downing Street, you worried more about the optics than the people in your care. You said, let the bodies pile high, rather than risk your precious place in the polls. 205,000 people died on your watch. Millions of us followed the rules you yourself had made. You ignored them. You held us in contempt. And the scale of your arrogance was breathtaking. As we were unable to give funerals to the ones we loved, you partied on because the rules were for the little people. You were hot air all along. You never sought to lead. You simply wanted to be the leader, and your enormous ego and arrogance and bluff were not enough to see it through. As a human being, you are beneath contempt. As a politician, you were an utter failure. Good riddance and goodbye.